And Colin Peacock is in the studio now. Good evening, Colin, with Midweek Media Watch. How good we get to do this in person.
Indeed, indeed. I'm so glad you came down to Wellington. I hope you brought your coat, two coats maybe from Auckland.
I'm born and raised in Wellington.
Okay.
So just to use that as a preface for the fact that the plane was just really bumping around to land today.
Still would have been warm inside that plane though.
It was warm inside until I came out and I just went, ooh.
Actually,
yes.
I must say though, great to hear you talking to Chris there, because Chris Hyde, I spoke to him just a few days after Cyclone Gabrielle hit. He just got his power back. I think some of the roads had just been restored, but he had two newsrooms in Hastings and Napier that he couldn't communicate with. He wrote quite movingly actually about being literally powerless to actually do your job, and how wretched it was. And he spoke really well, but he sounded awfully tired. And it's so funny hearing him say, I had to chuckle. I know that he doesn't mean it to be funny, but with his understatement there, going, we've had a fair bit of news the last couple of months in Hawke's Bay. He certainly has. And he's relatively new into the job of editing the paper too. So I was going to say a baptism of fire, but it's a baptism of flood water and politics.
Absolutely.
And everything else that he's
yeah.
had to endure. So, but great to hear from him again, because I haven't spoken to him since that time when he was clearly on his last legs, stamina-wise, with what he'd had to put up with.
No, definitely. And just so, it's so important, isn't it, that our media are actually available to speak and to speak in the moment about the things that are happening, albeit we can all appreciate that he'd prefer it just pause for a moment there in
sure.
Hawke's Bay. Well, where shall we start? You want to start with a decision that means a rather expensive and important advert can't be seen on our screens anymore.
Yes, thanks to the Advertising Standards Authority. That's the outfit that upholds standards in advertising and considers complaints. Now, every now and then they release a bunch of decisions after they've had a board meeting and publish them in one newsletter. And a bunch of these came out on Monday, and I usually look through the ones that it says have been upheld to see which ones crossed the line. Is there a little news story in it? And I thought I might be the only one that does this, but News Hub and just today The Spinoff have both done a story on this particular pair of decisions that we're going to talk about. So this is about a series of ads for the Department of Corrections. And the intention was to try and recruit new and urgently needed corrections officers. So there were three commercials in the series and a bunch of small ones, but the main ones were 45-second ads, which are followed in the same commercial break by a little 15-second follow-up, where the characters in the ad kind of break the fourth wall, as they call it, and stare down the camera and talk to you. So there was one that was played a lot. If people can put this in their minds, I'm sure a lot of people would have seen it over the recent weeks. There's a guy who's in a corrections officer's uniform. He's off duty and he's at a barbecue describing his job to another guy about how he changes the lives of the people and the inmates. And the guy running the barbecue is very impressed listening to this and just kind of sheepishly tells the prison officer when he works, or what's your job? He just goes, oh, I work in a bank, mate. But does that sound familiar at all?
Yeah, I totally know which ad you're talking about. Is that one of the ads that's been banned?
Not that one. It's interesting. Huh. So that one's okay. I thought it had a bit of a weird vibe, actually. The guy at the barbecue was a bit intense. But anyhow, the ad in the series that has been complained about is one that has a title on it called Your Dad's a Good Man. But I think played almost as much as the previous one we just mentioned there. So a former prison officer and a child encounter, a former prisoner, I should say, and his child bump into an off-duty corrections officer in the car park at a sports field. And there's a kind of awkward, frosty interaction between the two. And the kid pipes up and says, how do you two know each other? And this is what the ad sounds like.
Hey, John. How's life treating you? Good?
Pretty good, yeah.
How do you know my dad? Did you guys work together?
Yeah, we worked together. We did a lot of work together. That was, you know, ages ago, before you came along. Your dad's a good man. You're a lucky kid.
Kia ora, Mike.
So fairly intense when you can't see what's happening there, but there's a couple of quick flashbacks inside the ad where one shows the prisoner there talking to Mike, clashing with that corrections officer, and then that's followed by a scene of where they're getting along quite well in a prison workshop, so mending their relationship, I guess, and then in the follow-up ad, the one at the end of the ad break, where you see the characters again, it features the boy, so the former inmate's child, saying this directly to the camera.
I already knew Dad had been to prison. Mum told me, and I know it's all thanks to him that Dad's got a good job now. And so, yeah, might become a corrections officer one day too.
So, on the face of it, straightforward, what was the objection?
Yeah, so the complaint was about perpetuating a negative racial stereotype. The former inmate who's speaking there is of Māori appearance. And in the case of the bit you just heard there, a complainant, the one with where the boy is speaking, his son, the complainant was concerned that the advert was offensive and ignored the system failure that led to the over-incarceration of Māori. Which I might have thought was a bit out of scope of the actual ad, which is effectively a recruitment campaign, but the majority of the Standards Authority's complaints board agreed that the portrayal of the Māori boy discussing his father's rehabilitation perpetuated a stereotype, and that was likely to be offensive and harmful to some viewers. So there were three complaints also about the main ad, the first one we heard, the longer one, featuring Mike, the corrections officer, and the former inmate. Those were basically the objections were similar.
And so has corrections explained how the ads were made, defended them?
Yes, well, they did. And the ASA authority decision references that. So it says that they thought the campaign was going to present a realistic portrayal of corrections roles. They acknowledged that casting a former prisoner as a Māori man could be perceived as a negative stereotype, but they said we balanced this with the need to be authentic and have a positive message of rehabilitation. They also say the concept was tested widely with internal staff and an external focus group, and casting was undertaken with the advice of the ad agency's Māori cultural advisor. Diversity was a key factor. They cast a range of ethnicities in the ads, men and women too. Earlier today, the spin-off, when they looked at this issue, they reported that the founder of a creative consultancy called Ira, name of Johnson Mackay, who's Māori, had said it was a mistake to make the corrections officer European-looking and the inmate Māori-looking, although he points out, as quoted by the spin-off, that the corrections officer, who knows, he could be Māori, the inmate could be Samoan, Greek, you know, who knows, but the perception of seeing the ad is that this is the message. And he also felt that the interaction between the father and son, with the corrections officer present, disrespected the inmate, emphasises conformity and not healing and rehabilitation. So he thought the ad's execution was wrong and there was a missed opportunity here, and that the ads, in his words, weren't trusting Aotearoa to have a mature, open, honest communication, and that the ads were insincere and inauthentic.
Okay, so what do the advertising rules actually say?
Yeah, now that's interesting. So the key part here is Principle 1 in the authority's code, social responsibility. It says adverts must not contain anything indecent, exploitative or degrading or likely to cause harm or serious widespread offence, give rise to hostility, contempt, abuse or ridicule. But there's actually also a specific guideline on stereotypes. It says they may be used in adverts to simplify communication in relation to a product that's offered or the intended consumer, but they must not feature stereotypical roles or characteristics which, and maybe this is the key part, through their content and context, are likely to be harmful or offensive to people, particularly children and young people.
Right. So do ads get checked or approved before they go on TV?
Almost always they do. Almost all ads must be pre-approved by the authority itself, which is interesting, eh? Because these were approved in November last year. And in the decision, the ruling, they mentioned this. They said, this is a quote from the document, it said at that time, nothing in particular puts these two commercials in breach of guidelines and standards. They are straightforward and low-key and fit the G classification. And then specifically it says on that matter of stereotypes and social responsibility, everything seems to be in order. And look, the makers, which is a company called Stanley Street, an established professional ad agency based in Auckland that has done work before, I think, for corrections, you know, when they put out a kind of press release, kind of puff piece really about these ads, because they were quite proud of them. They said, look, we worked alongside a diverse and engaged group of stakeholders. The message needs to be authentic and confronting but compassionate. We want to change perceptions of the role corrections officers play and the improved outcomes they can create. Each story is unapologetically emotive, they say, informed by the real world experience of the cast, corrections officers and the people they work with. So they were really convinced that they'd created something quite authentic that fitted the bill and that they could be proud of.
So how did the ASA's complaints board come to a different conclusion?
Yeah, so part of this was, I think, they said that when they considered the complaints about the ads, they had to consider the ads on their own individually and not in the context of the other ones that might have had a different ethnic mix or, you know, that wasn't part of the whole production. They did note that with approximately 53% of the prison population being Māori, there is a valid reason on those grounds to cast a Māori actor to play the prisoner. That's not unreasonable. However, the majority of the board said the threshold for a harmful stereotype was triggered by casting a Pākehā man as the corrections officer and portraying this power imbalance. So, for example, when the child in that second shorter ad said, it's all thanks to him that my dad's got a good job now, they say this is problematic and reinforced the white saviour racial stereotype. And the board said that language diminished the father's agency and the mahi he himself had undertaken to turn his life around. And that added to that negative typecasting. So, it's tricky. They also said that the board said that the complaints board, this is, said that stereotype wasn't actually required to convey the advertiser's message, which was about the merits of working in the corrections field. So, it's complicated.
So what happens to those two ads now? Can they still be played at all, or what's the story?
Well, the ruling is not in that form. Unless the advertiser appeals and it's turned over. But these ads have been running for a long time, so possibly they might have come near the end of their run as well. And as was pointed out, this is part of a bigger campaign. So there were three main television commercials with those second part of the ads that run in the second block. There's also online media, there's social media, billboards and posters that are fine. So it was pretty much the way those ads individually were presented that are not okay to screen as they are.
And of course there's the expense of making them and of scheduling them on TV.
Yeah, and until I looked into this, I didn't realise that this had actually been quite a big issue. So the ads were made last year for this very specific purpose. They were desperately short of corrections officers. They were even talking at one point about declaring an emergency and getting Defence Force staff in to fill gaps. It was that bad. So the minister at the time authorised spending of just under $4 million for this campaign, most of which, about two-thirds of which, would have been actually, you know, on the airing and buying the airtime for the commercial, maybe about a third for the production. But a big job, certainly a big budget. And at the time, TVNZ featured this as a news issue. Their political reporter, Mikey Sherman, put the Corrections Minister, Kelvin Davis, on the spot like this for TVNZ One News.
Are you personally surprised by that figure?
No, I think that's what the market is at this stage, I think.
$4 million for a TV ad?
But it was a series of ads as well as social media stuff.
We've been told that there's no money being able to be put aside to retain staff. There's no money able to be put aside to recruit staff.
Yeah, and that last voice you heard there, by the way, was a representative from the Prison Officers Union, who was worried about the amount they were spending that he thought could have gone on actual recruitment and paying the desperately needed prison officers.
And do we know if the ads were effective, seeing as the campaign began months ago?
Well, it seems as though they were, judging by this. So again, this was in that same report back in October, when I guess those ads had already were already running. This is Mikey Sherman of TVNZ.
Corrections say applications have gone from around a handful to around 20 each day. They have around 270 live applications at the moment. But the union warns it takes around 3 months to train a person before they're able to begin work inside the wire. So we are still a way off yet in terms of filling those staffing shortage gaps.
So it would seem then that the ads had generated interest, at least from applications. And just, this is pure coincidence, but on Monday, TVNZ's Benedict Collins also returned to this issue. They'd done some OIA requests to find out how that had been going and reported back on what had happened since then.
Between October and February, Corrections received more than 3,000 job applications. After vetting, it's processing 800 of those, and it's already made formal offers to 250 people. 60 others have already started work as Corrections officers.
Yeah, so the ads clearly seem to have had some sort of impact, but just a major coincidence or irony, I suppose, that in that same news report you had the Corrections National Commissioner telling One News, you know, we're really pleased that campaign hit the right note. The very same day, the Advertising Standards Authority revealed that it had, in fact, upheld those complaints about one of the key ads because of, you know, negative stereotyping. So clearly not the right note as they saw it. So, I mean, it's complicated, isn't it? Because the agency clearly tried, and Corrections themselves, they had, as they say, focus groups, cultural advisors, you know, they thought they'd done something hard-hitting that was realistic and would fit the bill. And yet the complainants and the authority, when they looked at it, came to a different conclusion even than their own assessors did when they pre-approved the ads.
Yes, and the whole thing happening over a period of time, relatively significant in terms of months, beginning to where it's up to now.
Yes, a long time. So a lot of people would have seen that ad, which they've, Complaints Board now decided is a bit harmful. And I mean, it is a fraud area, I suppose. We had, you know, the Police 10-7 issue, which we've talked about before on Midweek Media Watch with Hayden. That wasn't as a result of formal complaints, but with TVNZ and FSL Collins, you know, raising it in the public, and then suddenly it becomes debated and a bit more of an issue. The police had kind of editorial control of the way that show was made rather than the makers, so a different mix. But, you know, this area of portraying justice and ethnicity is really complicated. And if I was an ad agency or a program maker, I'd be wondering, gosh, you know, how can we be fair to all our audiences and do things the right way and be sure that, you know, we're not going to cross a line, whether through carelessness or just underestimating or misjudging what experts and ordinary audiences are going to make of it.
I guess the significance of this decision, and also you mentioning Police 10-7, is that they do actually signal where the line is, where people may not necessarily have realised it in clear terms.
That's right. True. So even if you employ a focus group, an advisor and so on, you might have to run that ad by an audience, actually make it, screen it and say, well, what do you think of that? Because clearly when the Complaints Board had another look, you know, they saw it in a very different way when the complainant had highlighted the concerns that occurred to them.
Yes, well, staying with ads, but on a slightly different note, recent rulings on ad complaints weren't the only interesting thing released by the ASA lately. It's also published its annual summary of the advertising revenue going into the media. What's the result for 2022?
Well, it's really interesting. So it's up $3.4 billion, which sounds like quite a lot across the whole industry. So it was $3.2 billion in 2021. That's $3.4 in the calendar year of 2022. So look, the relevance of that is, I mean, that's not an epic jump, but during and after COVID, there were big warnings, big fears that there would be a kind of slump, like the advertising would fall, economic activity, you know, advertising be a nice to have for businesses, and this lifeblood of commercial media would maybe, you know, hit a new floor.
So not a huge jump, certainly not a slump. And how have different media businesses fared?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, because their costs are rising like everything else with the inflation and so on. So that incremental leap, 3.2 to 3.4 billion, not enough to offset the costs that they'll be having. Businesses like NZME and MediaWorks had already made big cuts to jobs and some services in the past, warning that they didn't think their ad revenues were going to come back. But, you know, this data covers TV, newspapers, magazines, interactive media, radio, billboards, and even junk mail and cinema ads, which are quite a small part of the business, but across all of those mainstream media areas. And the stats show that the online advertising is really pulling away. So more than half of that $3.4 billion is digital-only advertising, so online stuff. So TV still is over half a billion dollars, $517 million, newspapers through their printed products, but also their own website and app advertising. 219 million and 119 million respectively. So it's kind of holding up. Magazines still 117 million and another 36 for their digital offerings that are specific to those. Even $10 million still being spent on cinema advertising. So it's holding up in a way that some people just didn't think it would.
So does this mean that media companies and the experts will stop warning about the shrinkage or even possible collapse of ad-funded media?
I don't think they will. I mean, they will be heartened by this, I'm sure. But these days, you know, they're not considering themselves in competition with each other. Like TV3 and TVNZ aren't quite fighting. They consider they're fighting against Netflix and Facebook and just anything that could take away your eyeballs. So they'll still be saying that they'll still have to scrap for the advertisers that are out there. But just today, for example, Sky announced it's cutting 170-odd jobs. They're going to outsource some of their staff. Only Sky isn't advertising funded. It's mostly, anyway, it's people's subscriptions. But, you know, these mega trends are still out there and they will still be affecting these companies. So I don't think they'll be considering that they're, you know, financially secure if they're depending on advertising.
Right. Okay, topic change. Last Sunday when Media Watch aired the Posy Parker story, it was peaking. She wasn't here for very long, but the news about her visit, well, it goes on.
Yes, no shortage of angles for the media to keep running that story and the related fallout from it, I guess. So we had all the arguments about which side was more aggressive at that protest on Saturday, wasn't it, in Auckland and Albert Park. Then Parker's comments herself after leaving the country, dissing New Zealand in various ways, J.K. Rowling piling in on social media, Marilyn Davidson, the incident with the motorcycle, and her comment after that about cis white men and crime, other politicians' responses, of course. So part of it has been media figures also wanting to have their say. All of that's given it legs, so it's still going on now, some days after.
Where do you want to begin?
Well, you know, I don't want to comment on the whole controversy and the culture war thing, which obviously feeds into it. Yeah, but I'm thinking, yes, indeed. But the media aspects are relevant. So Posy Parker herself, I think, interesting to note, as soon as she left the country, she said online, there were lies spewed by politicians in Australia and New Zealand, boosted by a corrupt media populated by vile, dishonest, unskilled cult members. So not a nice description of media works. I don't really think that shows her operating in good faith there. And the thing is, my feeling is that, well, a lot of people had a lot to say about what they've seen in the news media. By and large, the event itself, that rally and what happened, has been pretty much reported matter-of-factly. You know, they said what they saw. They showed us the scenes. Reporting a protest, always hard to gauge it, because you can never get an overview of what's literally happening. But it's just those who feel the media are biased or corrupt or want to spin the news one way or other, they'll see what they want to see and criticise the media accordingly.
Exactly. I mean, one reason some people criticised the media and even partly blamed them for the chaotic scenes was that some broadcasters took sides last week and even urged people to join the protest.
Yeah,
what have they had to say?
That's unusual, isn't it? You don't often see them going beyond just giving their own opinion on something. So one of them was, as we heard in the program on Media Watch on Sunday, Today FM's Tova O'Brien and her colleague Lloyd Burr, they both urged listeners to take a stand. They actually went to the rally together, as it turns out, in the weekend. And then on Monday, Tova O'Brien was still on the same page as what she'd said on Friday and actually hitting back at her critics.
And to all of those people who are now rushing to their keyboards to tell me it's about women's rights, the same people, ironically, who have criticised me in the past for being too pro-women, too much of a feminist, but who have now suddenly become staunch defenders of women's rights.
Yeah, so interesting there. What she didn't do was kind of acknowledge that Parker had been shut down and her rally was effectively overwhelmed by the counter-protest. But she was pretty clear that she regarded the rally was, in her view, a pretty good and effective display of righteousness, should we say. So no qualms about doubling down on what she'd said before the protest ended in that way.
So what about your colleague, Lloyd Burr, who directly urged listeners to attend the protest to oppose Posy
Parker? Yeah, he said, see you there, 11 o'clock Albert Park, see you there. But interestingly, he did address the way that Posy Parker was shut down and suffered that indignity of the tomato juice on the head, like this.
It made the whole trans rights movement look just as intolerable as Posy. just as intolerable as Posey. It makes them look just as petty and pathetic as Posey herself. And the sad thing is, it's added fuel to the fire. It's lost the support and sympathy of many Kiwis who don't care what's between your legs or how you define yourself. And that's the real sad thing here.
So there was plenty of commentary in the media along those lines, including from politicians regretting or condemning the fact that Parker hounded off the microphone and was not able to be heard.
Yeah, plenty of people saying that. That seemed to be a default position that, oh, you know, don't like her, what she had to say necessarily, but, you know, the fact that a public event couldn't take place, it was something they seemed to regret. And it was interesting, the first sort of talkback opportunity of this, I think, was about 3 p.m. on Sunday, ZB's Weekend Collective show. So I had a listen. And the host, Tim Beveridge, took an interesting approach. He just said, look, you've seen the scenes, you've heard the arguments. Was it, in your view, what happened? Her getting shut down, like, was it a good day or a bad day for New Zealand, was just the way he asked the question.
And what did most people say?
Well, most people just said it was bad. They just reacted badly to scenes that seemed chaotic and disordered that they would have seen either on social media or on mainstream media news. A lot of them had the impression that the event was very violent or at the very least quite confrontational, you know, because they'd seen the flashpoints. It was also interesting that many people brought up the Destiny Church rally. They'd seen those pictures in Aotea Square of that separate event in the presence of Brian Tamaki and some of the others turning up at the Albert Park as well. They didn't like that. A lot of people raised that. Not many, I thought, people might have voiced, you know, their actual, tried to go to the, you know, the anti-trans or their fears or suspicions or whatever, express those sorts of sentiments or possibly just wider sort of anti-rainbow community things. But no one really did. And but a lot of them, interestingly, well, several, I should say, callers within that hour really wanted to make the point that they thought the media had been captured by or was at least sympathetic to, biased towards the rainbow community and were literally in support of trans rights. One of those who was criticising the media was another Today FM host, Rachel Smalley. Before the event, she said no government MP should attend it because they would be speaking against women. And she said on Monday when she was back on air, look, we saw remarkable bias in mainstream reporting. And she said she now feels a very lonely voice in the media. And then she said she didn't think she would see any more balanced reporting again this week, and concluded by making this point about the media.
I don't think we will see balanced reporting again this week. The mainstream media is by default young. Too young to really understand how hard fought women's rights have been. They've been born and raised in a world that many of us fought hard to change in the years that have gone by. They've benefited from those changes, but they haven't understood the struggle.
Yes, now I'm the wrong person, gender-wise or age-wise, for a view on that necessarily, but I did raise it with a few people who thought, you know, that would be... they felt patronising, and other people would see it that way. You know, it's possible that younger journalists today working in the media aren't unaware of struggles in the past or the fact that they've benefited from others. I mean, Rachel Smalley told a story about being a sports reporter, being denied opportunities and being discriminated against, treated poorly. And that, you know, that was sad to hear. But I have to say that those people I've put those comments to did not feel that that was a fair comment on, you know, colleagues who have come after her in the media. But she also made other comments about the media, saying, I want to see journalists calling out the intimidating behaviour they saw on Saturday, and that, you know, concerns about women feeling safe and occupying women-only spaces have to be talked about. And she didn't think that the media were helping us do their part in a well-functioning democracy. But, you know, those questions about bathroom safe spaces, they were canvassed by Kim Hill in interviews by Nick Trubridge of News Hub, for example, just over the preceding days. So I don't think those are issues that the media have completely ignored.
Now, last weekend on Media Watch, you looked at the decision made the day before in the High Court, which effectively gave Parker the green light and led to the scenes we saw from Albert Park. Has that been re-examined?
No, not really. Maybe the people feel the decision stood in and of itself. But what I thought wasn't widely reported, and I was a bit surprised, was how she came to be here in the first place. Like, why her? Why here on this issue? And, you know, it turns out it's Australia's Conservative Political Action Conference flew Parker out from the UK to Australia, which meant she was able to make the journey over here. There was an interview, I included a snippet in Media Watch on the weekend, but kind of buried it, where last Friday, she told ABC Radio in Melbourne that Oh, sorry, this is Andrew Cooper, the head of that conservative political group that brought her out to Australia. The Her visit had been a big success in spite of the aggro in Melbourne because they got stuff aired in the media. And when he was asked why her views were important to him personally or to that conservative political action conference, this is what Andrew Cooper said.
No, there's a legitimate discussion to be had here. And as I said before, as the father of two teenage daughters, having biological males in the bathrooms with them was a concern to me, and it's a concern to many parents. And I think that's the conversation that, you know, we were hoping to stimulate and have discussion around that. That doesn't mean sort of under the radar with the people that are in the media, people like yourself, and I guess people like myself, but a lot of people don't know what the issues are.
Yeah, so I find that interesting. So he raised himself his own concern about this bathroom issue for his teenage daughters, and he felt that this was a legitimate area for wider public discussion. But even if you believe that, I mean, when it was put to him, like, this is someone from the fringe of these debates, Posey Parker. You've brought her out, you know, you put her at the centre of it, hoping that this would be aired in the media. But he just wouldn't accept that they'd selected someone from the edges of the debate, and he claimed to have not much knowledge of some of the extreme and provocative things she'd said outside of this area as well, and that she was definitely going to be provocative. So I don't think bringing her out from the UK had a whole lot to do with women's rights, and had a bit more to do with that outfit's conservative political concerns in Australia and their efforts to influence the media there.
We've got just under a minute before the news at 11, but we've got time to say a new media columnist is in town.
Yes, just very briefly, Shane Curry, many years as chief editor at the Herald and NZME. He's now the editor at large, so he's shed a few responsibilities, kind of back on the tools. He's given himself a weekly column called The Media Insider. Some of his first effort was kind of puffing up NZME products a little bit, like Mike Hosking going off to the UK with Kate Hawksby as partner and fellow broadcaster to do the coronation of the king. And also just today, he's launched a new series, Lunch with a Mover and Shaker, so Lunch with Wayne Brown. You can hear all about Wayne Brown eating risotto in an upscale restaurant and wanting to move the ports of Auckland at leisure with the editor at large now, Shane Curry.
Colin, a pleasure. Midweek Media Watch. There it is.